I'm Mike Mason with a check of the local news on KDLG. A Dillingham City School District teacher is being considered by the state of Alaska for the Teacher of the Year Award. KDLG's Thea Card sat down with her and filed this report.
Erica Schneider grew up in Massachusetts, went to Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, and immediately started applying for jobs in interesting locations, like Alaska. She taught in the Bering Strait School District for 4 years and has been teaching in Dillingham for the past three. Schneider is a sixth grade teacher at the Dillingham Middle School. This year, she's teaching English and social studies, but she can also teach math. She says she became a teacher because she believes educating children is important for society.
I've had a really good education myself, and I wanted to be able to give that back to other people and help students learn. Our students are our future, and we need them to be knowledgeable and be skilled, and so I thought I could contribute to that.
Earlier this year, Schneider was awarded the Dillingham City School District's Teacher of the Year. Afterwards, she decided to apply for the statewide Teacher of the Year Award.
It's a 10-page long application with all these essays. And I looked at the questions and said, oh, this is a lot of work during the summer when we're busy catching fish and doing all that. But it was actually a really good chance to reflect on my teaching. I'm 7 years into teaching, and so it was a really good way to look back and say, what have I done? Where am I still going? And so I kind of chose to do it for that reflection piece and to see where it would end up.
In her application, Schneider talked about the kids in Dillingham and the work that she has been doing with them.
I wrote about my teaching and the great kids that we have, and I think they liked that. And I don't have any particular expectations about whether I'll be, selected as the top one or not. I think if I were, I'd use it to represent the great things that Alaska teachers do. I don't think I'm the best even within our building, but I think I can be a voice for the good things that everybody does do.
The winners of the Alaska Teacher of the Year Award received technology money for their school as well as getting to attend a reception in Washington, D.C. with the president. Dillingham is no stranger to the Alaska Teacher of the Year Award. The current winner is Denise Lisak, a recently retired reading specialist in Dillingham Elementary School. Previous Dillingham winners include Marilyn Rosine and Ina Boker. Although she hasn't spoken to any of the previous winners yet, Schneider says she'll probably ask for their help before her final interview with the state in October. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
The Community Development Quota Organization for the Bristol Bay Region has made a significant change to the biggest pot of money it can give out at one time. For several years, the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation has had in place a processing plant grant program that allowed grants of up to $2 million to tribal or municipal governments to facilitate new seafood processing capacity in Bristol Bay. The best example of the use of the grant program is the $2 million that BBEDC gave to the Traditional Council of Togiak several years ago that allowed the council to create a 50-50 partnership with Copper River Seafoods. The result was the creation of Togiak Seafoods in the small village of Togiak. Togiak Seafoods now operates a processing plant in the village that serves a primarily local fleet of drifters and set netters. According to the recently released BBEDC annual report, the processing plant grant program was eliminated and has been replaced with something called the Infrastructure Grant Fund. Norm Van Vactor is BBEDC's CEO.
Seafood plants aren't for everybody. Yes, they might be appropriate for Togiak or for Dillingham or for Naknek or some of the communities that are directly coastal. But, is a seafood processing plant appropriate, for example, for Equok? Probably not. But are there other things that are appropriate for Equok? Absolutely. And so I think, that same argument can apply to an awful lot of other communities. So our board decision was to make it less restrictive and to remove basically the description of seafood infrastructure and just make it community infrastructure. And that way, if a community wants to utilize that money or apply for that money to build a seafood plant, more power to them. Absolutely. It's there for that.
The change from the Processing Plant Grant Program to the Infrastructure Grant Fund was made late last year, and it allows tribal and city governments to apply for up to $2 million to help pay for large infrastructure projects. Van Vactor confirms that the first recipient of the funds from the Infrastructure Grant Fund was the village of Equok, which sits on the banks of the Nooshigak River.
The community of Equok, for probably close to 5 years now, has been working on a road project to a new landfill. And one of the major stumbling blocks, they've got money from different sources, from state and federal money. They've been accumulating some funds on their own, but they lacked approximately $2.5 million for a bridge in the middle of this road project. And through a lot of hard work on the part of community members of Equawk in working through the application and some folks in-house and some consultants, our board recently approved an application contingent upon their getting some additional funding for up to $2 million to complete that project. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it's about economic infrastructure development, irregardless of the form or shape that it might take in any given community.
The distribution of funds from the Infrastructure Grant Fund must be approved by the Board of Directors of BBEDC, and the budget allows up to $2 million to be used a year. Despite the change to the processing plant grant program, BBEDC still spends millions of dollars a year supporting the commercial fishing industry, which is at the heart of the local economy. This year, the corporation rolled out a new vessel acquisition program that allows Bristol Bay salmon permit holders to get assistance to get a new or better vessel. Van Vactor confirms that work is underway to make it easier for local fishermen to get a good, competitive fishing vessel.
And one of the things we're working on in the background, too, is actually, and we in-house kind of jokingly refer to it as the Rawson of the 2020s, but a couple of us are spending a increasingly significant amount of time on evaluating and looking around and seeing what options are out there that we could potentially get behind and support in terms of bringing a new class of vessel, a new class of 32-footer into our fishery and into our region that is one efficient, competitive, and affordable. And at the moment, it's the affordable component that is the toughest part of it all. But we're working on it.
The Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation is one of the six CDQ organizations that split up about 10% of all the groundfish in the Bering Sea. They are charged with using a rate they generate to invest in economic development projects and initiatives in the regions they serve. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell held a press conference with state officials today to discuss the state's Ebola preparedness plan. KDLG's Thea Card listened in, and she filed this report.
Parnell was joined in Anchorage by Health and Social Services Commissioner Bill Struer, Chief Epidemiologist Dr. Joe McLaughlin, and Epidemiologist Dr. Michael Cooper. Parnell said every indication pointed at Alaska being at low risk for Ebola. However, he did stress that it was a concern.
I have set a high bar for preparedness in the state across a whole range of needs, and Ebola is certainly one of those areas where we want to raise the bar on our preparedness.
Parnell said the state is preparing for the worst-case scenario, even though there is little chance of Ebola traveling to Alaska.
As such, I have directed the Department of Health and Social Services to take some actions. I've directed the commissioner to create a multi-agency Ebola task force to coordinate planning and preparedness efforts among multiple agencies. They've already met a few times, and I've asked for weekly briefings for the length of this potential public health concern.
He went on to say that Alaska State hospitals and nursing homes will be represented in the task forces. Parnell said the Division of Public Health Section of Epidemiology has been working on several programs to keep Alaska at low risk for Ebola.
Some interagency teleconferences, multidisciplinary lectures to healthcare providers, in different settings, public health alerts, multiple television and radio media interviews, frequent telephone and email consultations with stakeholders, and they've participated in regular teleconferences with the CDC and other states to ensure updated and accurate information.
Parnell said these precautions help educate the people of Alaska of the appropriate actions to take if a case of Ebola is found in the state. He went on to say that residents should be particularly cautious when traveling on airplanes and to be sure to get their flu shots this winter. It may not protect against Ebola, but it will keep the immune system strong. For more information on the state's plan against Ebola, visit the Section of Epidemiology website at www.epi.alaska.gov. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
The second annual Alaska Women's Summit is being held at the University of Alaska Anchorage today and tomorrow. Those hosting include U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Alaska First Lady Sandy Parnell, former Lieutenant Governor and former UAA Chancellor Fran Ulmer, State Senator Liesl McGuire, and State Representative Charisse Millett. The summit was created after Senator McGuire commissioned a report on the status of women in Alaska in regards to housing and homelessness, domestic violence, the wage gap, and mental health and health care. The report showed that Alaska is one of the most challenging places in the United States for women. McGuire says the summit's mission is to call on Alaska's brightest women to come together to work on finding answers to the toughest questions facing Alaska women and their families. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration recently agreed to settle three civil enforcement cases involving flow scales on board the American Seafood Company's fishing vessels. KDLG's Thea Card has the details.
The case says that personnel aboard the ASC's catcher processor vessels American Dynasty, Ocean Rover, and Northern Eagle violated the Magnuson-Stevens Act and the American Fisheries Act by causing the flow scales to weigh inaccurately. The public affairs officer for the NOAA Fisheries Alaska region, Julie Spiegel, says there were three separate cases that were settled all at once. She says the issue was brought to the administration's attention by observers on board the vessels.
And the observers noted that there were discrepancies between the weights recorded by the flow scales and their own platform scales, which are used in their sampling work, and they reported that. So flow scales measure or weigh the catch aboard the catcher processor vessels so that we have a good accurate measure of the amount of fish that's being caught so that we know when the total allowable catch has been caught.
The violations were investigated by NOAA's Office of Law Enforcement and prosecuted by the Enforcement Section of NOAA's Office of General Counsel. Spiegel says ASC has agreed to pay a combined civil penalty of $1.75 million to settle all three cases.
Well, NOAA believes that the $1.75 million civil penalty appropriately does accomplish its enforcement goals, which include protecting fisheries, achieving compliance with regulatory requirements, and making the most effective use of limited enforcement resources. So we are content with the agreement.
Spiegel says NOAA was informed, not fish and game, because the violations took place in federal waters, which are administrated under NOAA's Office of Law Enforcement. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
The American Nurses Association has endorsed U.S. Senator Mark Begich for re-election to the Senate. The group notes that Begich's efforts to support investments in nursing education, critical mental health programs, and addressing Alaska's nursing staff shortage are among the reasons for the endorsement. The president of the Alaska chapter of the ANA says that Begich understands the issues that healthcare professionals deal with on a daily basis, and he works hard for the interests like safe staffing and mental health. Independent candidate for Bill Walker recently released a TV ad targeting Spanish-speaking voters in the state of Alaska. In a race where every vote counts, the campaign hopes the ad will give them the upper hand. KTOO's Kayla DeRoche has more.
The ad, airing on Telemundo, features longtime Walker family friends Elena Sedano and Manny Escobedo. Walker makes an appearance toward the end.
Soy Bill Walker. Apruebo este mensaje.
Vota para mi abuelo.
Paid for by Walker Mulat for Alaska.
That was Walker giving his name and saying that he approves the message. The other voice you hear is Walker's granddaughter Mara encouraging Alaskans to vote for him. Walker's daughter Lindsay Hobson majored in Spanish during college and enrolled Mara in a bilingual school in Anchorage. Hobson says her father does not speak the language but spent a lot of time rehearsing his line.
He genuinely wanted to get it down right, and you know, he did it over and over and over. Everybody was just so patient, and it was just such a great experience, really.
Hobson is a spokesperson for her father's campaign and believes the Spanish language commercial taps into an important demographic.
I think I heard somewhere that one vote in Alaska is worth 55 votes in New York. You know, it really is important because we are all Alaskans, and to engage different communities within the state is also in line with the idea of, you know, having a more inclusive government.
Hobson says an account executive with Telemundo told her it's unique to have a commercial produced in Spanish. Most campaigns simply dub over English language commercials. She says the campaign spent $600 to make the ad It will pay $2,500 to air the spot through Election Day. The Walker Mulott ticket has raised more than $500,000 so far this election cycle. Luke Miller, Deputy Press Secretary for Governor Sean Parnell's campaign, says Parnell has not yet produced any commercials in other languages.
The governor's working to get every single Alaskan's vote. He doesn't necessarily differentiate between any Alaskan, and when he's across the state in different communities, he's meeting with people of all races and all colors.
According to the State Department of Labor, people of Latino heritage made up more than 5% of Alaska's population in the 2010 U.S. Census. The census shows the number of Hispanic people in Alaska is growing faster than the same demographic nationwide. In Juneau, I'm Kayla Jarosh.
Alaska writers and naturalist Richard Nelson and Hank Linfer are nearing the end of a two-year project recording the voices of Glacier Bay. The project is a collaboration between Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, the University of Alaska Southeast, and Cornell University, which houses the world's largest collection of natural sounds. Nelson and Linfer hope to change how others experience the world through a dimension beyond what we can actually see. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, Linfer and Nelson want us to listen, and listen closely.
In May 2013, Richard Nelson and Hank Linfer set out into Glacier Bay, armed with recording equipment and a wish list of sounds. They spent up to 10 days at a time camped in the park, often waking up at 3 a.m. to the soundscape of birdsong. Since then, they've collected more than 1,000 sounds of the park, including about 100 bird species. Linfer says they've captured the gamut of marine mammals, a range of terrestrial mammals.
And we've got things like glaciers and streams and rivers and melting icebergs that pop and bubble as they're melting. Just all kinds of crazy sounds.
Nelson says the Voices of Glacier Bay project was born from the premise that society has stopped listening.
We live in this world that's just filled with beautiful sounds, the spring choruses that we can hear in the forest, and the wind and the waters. We're constantly surrounded by sounds.
But, he says, we grow up in a culture that doesn't pay attention to them. In the field, the duo used sensitive mics and a parabolic dish that gathers and amplifies the sound. Often the best technique was proximity.
If you can get close to a single animal talking and get all the nuances and textures of its voice, it makes for a great recording.
But there are times when this doesn't work.
Like a thrush sounds best if you back off from it a little bit and get that rich melodic sound bouncing off the surrounding trees.
Nelson says the forest acts as a thrush's natural amphitheater and helps create a cathedral sound. An optimal time to capture this effect is after a rain or in the morning.
When everything's wet with dew and you have all these wet reflecting surfaces. So you might have a million little reflectors that bird is singing into. And all that comes back into your microphone and creates this amazing resonance that you just can't get if it's in a wide open place.
Of the more than 1,000 sounds they captured, Nelson and Linfer each know instantly what their favorite sound is.
For me, it was coming down the bay in the skiff late in the evening in August, flat calm, the sun was going down, and we got into a channel between a big bedrock mountain and a large bedrock island, probably a mile and a half apart, and there were maybe 30 whales in there in three different groups.
Linfer heard the whales breathing, and what followed was the biggest sound he's ever heard.
So, of course, I get out the microphones, I get set up, and there's a boat in the background. It's like, oh, are you kidding me? You know, I can't record. Wait. The boat goes, get ready, another boat. But the whales keep making the sound. And finally, the bay gets quiet, and they're still doing it. I hit the record button. The real joy of recording is it just locks you into the present moment. There's nothing but that sound. And you're just reveling in the beauty of it and a great fortune to be there in a place where those sounds still exist.
Nelson's favorite experience recording in Glacier Bay took place in June, on a day when he and Lentford decided to go in separate directions. As Nelson kayaked into a small cove,
I saw an animal on the beach, and the animal turned out to be a wolf. I didn't have my equipment ready, and apparently the wolf didn't care. It started to howl.
Nelson moved toward the shore very slowly. He sat in his kayak about 50 feet from the wolf. It laid down, and Nelson waited and waited and waited. Finally, Nelson says both he and Lentfer feel an incredible sense of privilege for getting to do this work.
We are able to go into these places and hear the original voices of the North American land. Hopefully, future generations will be able to hear our recordings, and in a perfect world, people will be able to go back to these same places and hear these same voices 100 years from now.
For both men, there will always be the sounds that got away, like the earthquake in June that originated in Glacier Bay as both men slept in a tent miles from the epicenter. Or like the elusive wolverine, there are sounds they'll be chasing for a long time to come, possibly for the rest of their lives. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Many of the stories you hear during the KDLG local news can be found online at kdlg.org. You can also find contact information on that website if you would like to provide a comment, correction, or a news tip. That's a check of the local news on listener-supported public radio KDLG. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason, reporting.